Listener-supported KTOO, welcome to a Juno Afternoon. It's Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gwyneth Cheese, for joining the conversation. On today's show, want to become more knowledgeable about wildlife? We will find out more about the upcoming wildlife tracking certification course coming to Juno. We'll have an update from Southeast Alaska Food Bank and how you can help. And National Cancer Survivors Day Celebration of Life Walk is happening soon. Those conversations, bird note, a savory moment, music, and more coming up right here on a Juno Afternoon.
Hanson Grass. Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tak anakaya ha anikak. Gunnish cheese.
You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno and 91.7 Juno Auk Bay and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A programming note before we start today, Juno Afternoon will be on a break from this Thursday, May 25th through Tuesday, June 6th. If you are looking to get on the program in June, email junoafternoon@ktoo.org and we will get back to you in early June when we are back. Gwyneth Cheese for your continued support of Juno Afternoon. So, at the end of July, the second wildlife certification training program is happening here in Juno. It's a program of two nonprofits, South Sound Nature School and Tracker Certification. Program participants learn to recognize tracks of mammals, birds, reptiles, and other animals on the landscape. Here to talk about it, our program evaluator, Marcus Rennerson. And assisting Marcus is Gene Tagaban, renowned storyteller, trainer, and mentor. Marcus is a naturalist, educator, facilitator, writer, and photographer. He was the associate producer on the conservation documentary Last Stand, The Vanishing Caribou Rainforest, as well as a contributing author for Caribou Rainforest by Braided River Press. Welcome, Marcus, to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yes, thank you. And Gene Tagaban is a storyteller, a speaker, and a musician. Gene shares traditional Native American stories as well as stories from his personal experience, family, and historical events. He has traveled and worked with urban and rural communities, reservations, villages, schools, universities, and many more. Welcome, Gene.
Hey, it's good to be here. Gunath Jish.
For you both for being here. It's so wonderful. So Marcus, this will be the second time here in Juno for the wildlife certification through this program. Will you share a little bit about the program and what it entails?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a two-day immersive drop into all things wildlife track and sign. It's a particular training and evaluation and field assessment. And while it is an assessment, it is also a rich and in-depth training in how to read the landscape, how to learn about wildlife through the track and sign they leave. So it's kind of the bread and butter of what Tracker Certification North America offers across the continent in terms of field ecology training and wildlife track and sign.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was looking at the website and you are one of many trainers and certifiers. Is that right?
Yes, I'm one of 10 track and sign evaluators with the organization who, so there's 10 of us that are sanctioned to train and facilitate these certifications across the continent.
That's awesome.
And we also have another path, so to speak, that's wildlife trailing. And there's a few other evaluators that are sanctioned to run wildlife trailing trainings and evaluations as well.
I see. And so who is this program primarily aimed at?
It's a fairly broad array of folks, actually. And I mean, it's anywhere from wildlife, outdoor, environmental professionals. So we get scientists, we get researchers, we get conservationists, we get educators, all the way down to just amateur naturalists or simply people who love nature, people who hike, people who get outside, people who are birders. It's just another lens to look at the natural world. So we kind of say it's professional level training for everyone.
Gotcha. Okay. And so this is happening in July, right? It's the, I think it's the third or July in the 20s. What are the dates on that?
It's the last weekend in July, which is the 29th, 30th.
Okay. Yeah.
In the greater Juneau area.
Right. And so what should I do in the, 'cause that's a couple months away. What should I be doing now to prepare for this kind of training? 'Cause I've heard it's intensive in some ways. Yeah.
It can be, you know, it's definitely jumping into the deep end of wildlife tracking. However, we get a lot of feedback from folks who are beginners who absolutely love it. And it's not, you know, it is a training along with a field assessment. It's not a workshop. So we're not busting out whiteboards or thumbing through field guides and explaining the very basics in lesson form. We start off right away asking questions. Who is this? How many animals pass through? Which direction are they going? What gate are they moving in? What's the behavior here? How old are these tracks? What sign is this right here on this tree? So we just get right into it. And people either know the answers or they don't. And they go through, we go through about 10 questions at a time. And then we pause and we look at everybody's answers. And then we talk about them until folks are all on the same page. So while it is an assessment, the assessment creates just what we hope is the right amount of pressure for folks to really look closely, to think diligently, to deduce clearly, and to do their best to put their cards on the table. And there's a way in which when participants just take workshops, and I can feel this in myself too, I kind of can wait until the expert tells me about it. But in this format, every participant has to put their cards on the table first and really think through it carefully before they get told the answer. And it just creates a whole different depth to the learning process.
Yeah, you've mentioned.
Of course, I'll be curious to hear Gene's take on it, as he's been part of it as well.
Absolutely, and I know you've mentioned this a couple of times. So, what does it mean to be assessed? I mean, in terms of why would I want this evaluation? What does that do for me?
Yeah, right. Well, like I said, some people who are amateur naturalists or just nature lovers, they come to these assessments strictly because of the rich learning. They aren't really concerned about the certificate or the piece of paper beyond the fact that they then get benchmarks for their learning. And so Tracker Certification North America has a really rich learning community across the continent, and it's growing rapidly. And lots of people actually travel around the country kind of doing destination track and sign evaluations. They'll travel to places, and it's a way that they can learn about a place. I just had somebody yesterday say, like, what better way is there to learn about a new place we visit than to do a track and sign certification? And then we get people locally, regionally, who may be educators. They may be environmental outdoor educators. They may be on conservation camera trapping projects. They may be researchers of some other, in some other capacity. And that track and sign certificate really gives a clear sense of their ability to interpret, the language of the land and interpret the stories that animals are leaving behind. And more we are seeing different professional entities, government agencies, schools, nonprofits ask, like, hey, or put into job descriptions, hey, we'd like somebody who's track and sign certified at level 3, at least, that can join our camera trap team, or that can be in can run transects for us, or that can take these eighth graders out and introduce them to wildlife. So we're seeing that grow a lot.
That's awesome. So, Gene, I know many of the folks who are listening now probably know you for your storytelling and performance as One Crazy Raven, which people can find out more about at your website, storytellingraven.com. It'd be great to have you back on to talk about all that stuff at some point. But how are you involved in the wildlife certification program?
Hey, you know, it's good to be here. And thanks for having us on. Hey, you know, you asked that question earlier too. It's like, what can we do to prepare for this? What do we need to do and step into? Basically, it's this, your preparation to be is just is a desire just to be connected with the environment around you. I mean, who else lives around you? Not only we have the humans around us, but so we have so many other beings who live around us. And what is the story behind it? And when we're tracking and we're out there on the land, we're taking a look at the story. As Marcus said, who is here? Where do they come from? Where are they going to? You know, and how long have they been here? And it just brings us, instead of walking around in the world like this, you know, we're opening up our vision like this and seeing, you may have lived in Southeast or Juneau your whole life, but maybe you're seeing it for the first time, just going out there, you know? And so it's just the desire just to like, just connect and just to learn, you know, not only connect with the land, but there's a connection with yourself, deeper part, deeper inside, that spiritual connection to the land, you know? And so part of mine is that, sure, I'm there to assist Marcus and, you know, with the evaluations and stuff, but as well as just to bring my perspective. I grew up in Juneau, man, you know, and I grew up out there on the land. And as a kid growing up, you know, as a kid, and that's the thing about tracking, the adults, you're tapping back into that childhood, you know, inquisitive wonderment, man. You know, if you were a kid, you saw a track, you're going, oh, where's this go? How far is it going to go? You know, what is this to, you know, and you create the story around it. You know, and that's what we're inviting people to come into. It's just, you know, sure, there's an evaluation there, but so much of it is just of the wonderment, man, the wonderment of just like your imagination, your curiosity. And when you step into that, you also step into this, you know, this wellness and healing part of who you are as a human being, you know, and learning more about who you are and your connection as a human being to place, time. The moment, you know, and it takes you out of all this other stuff and brings you right into the now, right into the moment, right into the present, you know, and taking a look at those things. And it's just, I love it, man. I love it. I just, you know, I just see the whole world in a different place now, even within urban settings. You cannot help but see it in a different place.
You got me really excited because when you said the thing about, you know, sort of taking it back to when you were a kid and the wonderment, and it is that even now, I think when just any person may go on a walk on a trail and all of a sudden you see some footprints or you see some scat or you see something and you're like, well, what is that? Right? Like just the idea of, and so even if you don't need like, I'm not trying to sell this for you, but in terms of like, even if you don't need the certification for like a job requirement or something like that, just the knowledge that you'll receive and this kind of, exactly. And even if you don't really want to be assessed or if you're assessed at a low level, it doesn't really matter, but just like the idea of being like, whoa, when I go and see some footprints or when I see something that's out there, I might be actually to recognize the world around me a little bit more and the place that I live.
Exactly.
I think is pretty awesome. I also just want to mention, Gene, that in doing research for this page, this is a side note, but I was looking at your Facebook page and man, you do some good stuff out there in the world. I'm going to cheese for all the things that you do, man. It's like, it's pretty amazing. Go check out Gene's Facebook page too. I'll make sure I link that on our show notes for this page as well, along with all the other pages that we have for this. So let's get into a couple more specifics. What kind of things will we learn in the certification program? What kind of things will we be looking at, tracking? I know we've talked about footprints a little bit. What are some of the other things we'll be looking for?
I just want to, before I answer that question, I want to say, yes, Gene is the assistant on the evaluation. He takes answers and, I'm not so fortunate on all the certifications that I run to have somebody as with who's as knowledgeable and as skilled of a teacher, educator, facilitator to help me along in delivering a beautiful educational experience for all. Gene is such a contribution on the evaluations that he's been on with me and just adds such a depth to it, particularly in Southeast Alaska, where he calls home and has brings just so much perspective. So it is a great privilege to have Gene tag it along and being my quote unquote assistant on that one. So, he's a huge contribution to the experience. So thank you, Gene, for that. So I think this also ties into how to prepare, right? Some people love to prepare a lot and hit the books. Some people like to just, I'm just going to go and not overthink it, not cram. And because it's not about that. It's about, you know, developing a relationship with place. So we're looking at foot structures and track anatomy and how to identify families of animals and species through footprints. We're learning to distinguish between lookalike species, of which there are many. We're looking at animal locomotion and the morphology of movement in gaits and how that relates to track patterns and how those gaits tell us about how animals are using landscape, because some species have preferred gaits in certain situations and then they shift to other gaits in certain situations. So that helps us start to tell a deeper story beyond just who this is, but we can say, what's this animal doing right here? We're looking at aging, the whole aging process of determining if these tracks are fresh or old, and event sequencing in a space to start to piece together a mystery. We're looking at different aspects of trailing and directions that animals are going, how many came through. We're talking about ecology and how the animals are using the landscape. Where are their larders on the landscape? Like, where are their major resources and where are they avoiding on the landscape and why? And predator prey interaction, a lot of physiology in the body. We look at all sorts of sign and behavior that's not just tracks on the ground, but we're looking at digs, beds, burrows, scent marking sign in a whole variety of ways, different feeding sign, kill sites, bird feather analysis, bird nests, osteology and bone identification. It's just such a rich array, and every evaluation is completely unique based off of what we find in the field on those 2 days. So it's a really deep dive into natural history.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm talking with Marcus Renerson and Gene Tagaman. We're talking about the wildlife certification course that's coming to the Juno Borough area at the end of July. So you have some time to look into it and sign up. So where does this, where do these 2 days take place?
Gene, you want to speak to last year?
Don't know. I mean, there's been some sites down at Montana Creek we thought we were going to take a look at, but it was flooded out at the one day it was there, and then the next day it was flooded out. But last year was like, as we faced these atmospheric rivers, believe it or not, last year we're in a time where we're setting rain records.
Yeah.
We were out there for 3 days in it. And that was something unto itself. So we're out there at Eagle Beach, there's all kinds of sign out there and all kinds of activity out there. And we're back at Dredge Lake area. And the Dredge Lake area was a great place just to explore and just to take a look at who's back there. Who's back there? And as we're going through there, we're finding out, taking a look at our relationship, not only to our place, but, we can't help but take a look at who am I? What's my place on the land, in this universe, and learning about the whole story, structure of, and not only that, we're taking a look at ancestry, because all of our ancestors were proficient and took a look at this at tracks, and they were connected to the land. We're taking a look at all of these aspects, all the technical parts that Marcus is talking about, which is fascinating, but also there's so much more to it, with the story, what's the storyline here, and what a great way for an activity with your family. This is a great family activity.
Oh yeah, that would be great.
and such too. But yeah, man, it's great. Again, thanks for having us on, and just want to encourage anybody out there just to you know, come on out and
yeah. So is it the kind of thing, Gene?
Dirty.
Is it the kind of thing where you're gonna you'll start scouting a few days early to figure out like where there's stuff that you can take folks? And like you said, I mean, almost any place you go, there's a story, right? There's definite history and there's story and there's connection to the land in so many ways. But I'm imagining that you'll do a little bit of pre-prep on see. Hopefully it doesn't rain as much as it did last year. That would be ridiculous, because yeah, we did set some records last year for sure. Okay, so what do I have to do to register, Marcus? Where do I go? How do I register?
Yeah. Well, you can trackercertification.com is our website, and it's linked on there, but that would just take you to South Sound Nature School's website. And so you can go to South Sound Nature School's website and directly register there. And just, you know, South Sound, Kevin O'Malley, who's the ED at South Sound Nature School based out of Seattle. And Kevin also has a lot of connection to Juneau way back when he worked for Discovery Southeast there. But you can go to his website and just directly sign up, and or you can link it there through trackercertification.com, and you'll see the Juneau eval on our calendar.
Absolutely. Is there a limit to the amount of people that can participate?
We cap it at 11.
11.
Okay. And at 11, just to make sure that we can have some intimacy with all the different questions, and we can get people in there looking at stuff. And, you know, on these assessments, we give people, there's no time limit to answering questions. We want to give people the spaciousness they need to explore the track or the sign, to really dive in, to really deduce, to think, to explore the mystery, to put a story together. So we cap it at 11, just so everybody can kind of have that full, rich experience with all the 56 questions that we ask over 2 days.
And I know that both websites and agencies and places, Tracker Certification and South Sound Nature School, they're both nonprofits. There is a fee for this program. I believe it's like $350 for the 2 days. You can find out all that information at those websites. So again, this is July 29th and 30th. It's the Wildlife Tracking Certification course. Gene is at storytellingraven.com. You can find out more about Marcus and all the work that they do at trackercertification.com, and you can have a direct sign up for this program at southsoundnatureschool.org. It's on the homepage. You just go there and you can find out a little bit more. You can see some video of various different things. They did this last, I think it was last summer, you guys did this as well. So Marcus, yeah, and Gene, Gunath Cheesh, for being here. Thank you so much for telling us about this awesome, awesome program. And we really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we look forward to being out there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Take care, y'all.
Up next, we'll get some updates from a Southeast Alaska Food Bank and how you might be able to help. But first, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. During the day, an American robin sings a lovely, familiar song of rich phrases. The phrases vary and ring forth with a lilting quality. But as the sun begins to set, robin's song takes on a new and exquisitely different character. From sunset until dark, a robin adds ethereal whispered notes to its carol, creating a song of remarkable grace and complexity. Let's listen more closely to the fine detail of a robin's evening song by slowing down the same notes to half normal speed. Here's another passage of evening song at half speed. In the high latitudes, where twilight lingers late into the evening, a robin may expand its daytime carols into a twilight symphony that continues for hours. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Clene Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life, for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment and say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gwyneth Cheesh to Vera Starbart, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave us additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization.
What I'm talking about. Now, everyone, give it up for the maid of honor, Angelica Schuyler.
A toast to the groom.
To the groom. To the groom. To the groom.
To the bride.
To the bride.
To the bride.
You may have heard that Hamilton is coming to Alaska. It'll be in Anchorage as part of the Broadway-bound AK series. And the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts is partnering with the Gilder Lehrman Institute of American History and Hamilton on an Alaska-specific statewide competition for students in rising grades 7 through 12. To submit a Hamilton-inspired two-minute video or two-page written piece showcasing their original works. Submissions must be a newly created rap, a piece of music, a spoken word scene, a poem, a short story, or theatrical performance inspired by Hamilton. We were just listening to Satisfied, one of those great songs from Hamilton. Submissions will be evaluated, and then the winners will travel to Anchorage for the Saturday, September 9th matinee performance of Hamilton. All winners from outside of Anchorage and Greater South Central will receive hotel accommodations along with airfare. Pretty cool program. So applications are now open. They open on the 16th. You have until June 20th for the deadline for those submissions. For more information regarding the Hamilton competition, please contact Jason Herr, Director of Marketing and Communications, or Lauren Rice, Community Engagement Manager at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts. You can look that up online and you will find their information and you can submit for Hamilton. It's a pretty cool program. So that's a really, really awesome. Now, the other thing that's awesome is the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, which is a vital component of life here in Juneau. The food bank now provides healthy and nutritious food for dozens of nonprofits, agencies, and to others who, due to challenging circumstances, cannot afford to provide for themselves and their families. The food bank continues to operate with just a couple of employees and many, many, many volunteers. Here with updates on the food bank is Jeremiah Beadle. Hi, Jeremiah. Good news for being here.
Thanks for having me, Boston.
Of course.
Very much appreciate the opportunity to bring the community up to speed as to what we've been up to and what the needs are.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. To get updated and what the needs are. So what's going on at the food bank?
So I'm sure it comes as no surprise that over the past few years, they've been tough. They've been tough for everybody.
Yeah. That pandemic thing.
Yeah. I'd like to think that we're kind of putting it behind us, but what's left behind is this massive amount of inflation that hasn't gone away. And when it comes to people stretching their dollars and trying to get them to go as far as they can, with food pricing having gone up as much as it has, it's a tough battle, and it's an uphill one. So we've found that our member organizations have had such a great need that we're not able to do things the way we used to.
Mm.
We're grateful for all the stores and what they give us. And we've been purchasing pallets of food through those stores as well to make up for what we don't get enough of. However, it's just not enough anymore. We've got to step up to the plate, and we recently did. We've been moving more than 50,000 pounds through the food bank per month,
that's a lot, right?
For us, it's a big number. When you don't have a lot of people, that's 100,000 pounds in and out. So,
yeah.
So you need a lot of legwork and muscle to get that stuff moving.
So it sounds like for sure you need more volunteers, probably.
If anyone had the opportunity and was in a position they could help out, we would certainly appreciate
strong
it.
Strong backs required.
We can, small amounts at a time, just
make
more
true.
Trips. So
yeah.
We do a lot of that too. But when it comes to trying to meet those needs of all our member organizations, we need a new warehouse. We need to be a real food bank. When I started on before the pandemic, I would walk in there and it would be like, wow, our shelves they're looking great. And I'd always see that we always had enough people. We wouldn't have to throttle anybody back, any of the needs of any of our members. Over the last couple of years, we've really had to let people know, please take only what you need. Please don't take any more, because we have to serve so many other people's needs. At the end of each day, after we'd done our pickups, our shelves would be empty, and we'd hope that we had enough coming in the next day, and that the shipments of more pallets that were delayed, because a lot of times the food items that we'd ordered just didn't exist. We'd want a pallet of, mac and cheese, or we'd want a pallet of chili or ravioli or beans or corn, and it would be a while in actually getting them, because the grocery stores we were getting them from couldn't source them as well.
So I know that the community probably knows the Southeast Alaska Food Bank as a thing where there are certain times of year where they do fundraisers, or they're partnering with different organizations to raise food, to bring cans, to do those things. That's how sort of a listener might be interacting with that. But you're talking about sort of the in and out of things. So you also are sponsored or are working with organizations, grocery stores, big food chains, things like that, that are getting you food that you're bringing in, right?
We rely very heavily on donations, much more so than we ever had before, and federal and state grants. Just recently, we realized that what we were doing it wasn't enough, and that even though we didn't have our warehouse together yet, we needed to start making some big purchases, and we did. We had through Feeding America, whom we're affiliated with through the Alaska Food Bank, we purchased an entire freezer van, 40-footer container van, just stacked full of pallets of protein. So we knew we needed to get proteins at a better price to where they would go further. We did it. We got it shipping here to town. I called up AML. I said, hey, AML, what can you do for us? We've got this shipment coming in. I was hoping for, maybe a 10% discount or a commercial rate, trying to make sure our money could go as far as it could. AML straight up told us, hey, Jeremiah, that bill you got for the freezer van that you guys get in, don't worry about it. How about how about you just rip that up? I said, are you kidding me? I was like, wow. So we were able to get proteins in, a lot of frozen meats, hamburger, sausage, and chicken drumsticks. I think the grand total, it came out to a little more than $1 a pound.
Wow.
And for us to be able to have things in bulk like that and hand those out to our member agencies, it's huge. And we just, we have a 40-foot container van coming in right now as well of canned goods. Mm. And once again, AML, you know, they mentioned, hey, you know what? Don't worry about that one either. So,
wow.
And we had to get a forklift to move these items. And I just can't believe it. When we make what we're doing known to the folks we work with here in Southeast Alaska, I'm just blown away by how giving all the businesses and the individuals are. AML came to bat and shipped us our forklift into town free of charge as well. We ended up picking up a new forklift with a grant, and they erased that bill for us also. So I'm very grateful for folks like AML. And then we have Yacobi Fisheries. They have a 40-foot container van of frozen foods in storage for us right now. They help us out quite a bit. A lot of folks realize what we're doing is a good thing and want to make sure that we're able to increase what it is we're capable of doing for all the different member agencies. I think we have 33 right now that rely on us for their nutritional needs.
33 agencies.
33 active. I think we have 40 on the books, but 33 active.
33 active. Yeah. And those are all based here in Southeast?
They are. They're all based in Southeast. Some of the bigger ones, the Aware Shelter, Jammy, the Glory Hall, and then any food pantry in Juneau, they go through us. So in order for them to do the best with what they can in their budget, they need to be focused on what it is they're best at and doing it to the, you know, to their fullest. Our job is to make sure we get them the nutritional needs taken care of and they don't have to focus their monies or attention on that
side. I think, Jeremiah, this is like the best example of that the Southeast Alaska Food Bank is the best example of what a middle person should be, right? Like in terms of like when they say like middle management or middlemen, you know, kind of thing, like you guys are accepting all of these wonderful donations that you get from individuals, from corporations, from various different things, the lovely AML donating certain shipping things for you, and then you're servicing 33 agencies, up to 40 potentially. And it's just like, what a great sort of place to be as an organization. I'm just admiring this organization for being able to swing both sides of that fence, right? Like you're helping out and also facilitating because otherwise each agency would have to try to figure out how to get some of this stuff themselves. So it's really what a great thing.
And on top of that, we're also the largest food pantry in Southeast Alaska, which is something we're trying to, we're hopeful that someone else might be able to come to the plate and help out on that side of things because we're servicing thousands of pounds a week and hundreds of people through our food pantries. So we're doing everything we can. When there's a need, we're going to do our damnedest to try to meet it. One big thing that I want to make sure everyone in Southeast Alaska is aware of is that we're getting our feet underneath us. We have these shipments coming in. When we see that we're getting lower in what it is that we have, we will be making movements towards getting more in. We're not going to be having to throttle people back like we did this past winter. I want to make sure that everyone in Southeast knows if you're a nonprofit, a 501c and or a tribal entity, and you feel like you guys are going to be able to use us in a way that, you know, is helpful to those that are in need in your communities, by all means, reach out, get lined up with us. I know that with the fisheries and the closure of certain fisheries, it could get very difficult for certain communities pretty fast. So we're here. We've got your back. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that we facilitate the nutritional needs as best we can. And we're not gonna hold back on that side. The big push that we have right now is that we need a warehouse. We need somewhere to be a real food bank for Southeast Alaska. I want to have the ability to have a couple container vans full of food on hand, and I want to be able to keep buying in bulk at a much reduced cost. And the only way we can do that is if we have a nice facility. We've jumped through the hoops. We've gotten to the point where we're through the Army Corps of Engineer approval. We have all the permitting. We're getting ready to start, bringing rock in and getting things lined up on that side. We have half the funding taken care of. We're a little more than halfway, I think. We're at about $500,000 through a state grant. We have some more coming in through a couple other grants. And I think we're sitting at roughly $500,000 shy is kind of where we're at now to make sure that everything goes the way that it needs to.
One giant donation.
Yes. One giant donation away. Or many small ones.
That's true.
Just fine, too.
That's true.
We've got all kinds of... And I love the fact that Southeast really does step up to the plate and help out everywhere they can. This is always in the back of your mind, but many folks don't have to think about it. When you think about food security, it's one of the bottom items of the pyramid of a healthy community. You need to have someone in a safe environment, so they need to feel safe and not have their life at risk. The second one to that is they need to be fed, they need to be nourished, and then they need a home. And if they don't have those three things, they're in a constant loop, a constant battle of survival. They don't ever get to the point where they can think outside of what it is that's, just trying to survive day to day. And the food side of things, this is where we come into play. And there's many other member agencies that help out with all the other aspects. And, we all need to be healthy and all need to be building together so that we can have a happy, healthy community for all of us here.
Besides, obviously, donating towards the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, donating cash and or donating food, what can I do in addition to those two things? Are there other things I can do?
Line a few things out right now. As far as the cash side goes, the State Employees Local 52 has a matching grant out right now on GoFundMe. Their matching grant will cover up to $30,000.
Wow.
And the downside is they're only at $2,000 right now. So we have until the 15th of June to utilize as much of that grant as we possibly can, that matching grant in there. So if anyone does want to have a force multiplier, have a $10 donation, turn into a $20 donation, you could get on GoFundMe and get onto the Southeast Alaska Food Bank fund there with the State Employees Local 52. So that would be a big one. That would be a big assistance. You can get onto our website and click the donate tab, southeastalaskafoodbank.org. And then Juneau Community Foundation also has, when you go under their give tab, their special projects, you'll find the food bank new warehouse fund in there too. So those are ways that if you were in a position to where you could lend that kind of support, those are ways you could do that. And then if you had the ability to put together a food drive with some friends and families, when we just love having people come through and like, hey, by the way, me and my buddies came together with this. I think there's a guy locally here that does a haunted house every Halloween and gathers as much food from that as he can. We have folks that, the Cub Scout organizations and different folks at different, work offices and different places will put together their own food drives, and they make big differences for us. So anything that someone's willing to do on that side, and or if you're able to come in, here and there and help out, the folks that are able to, help out on a more regular occasion are much more useful. Just like, hey, if you can come in once a month, great. We kind of give you the run of things the first time you're in, and guess what? You hit the ground running the next time you come in. As far as all that goes, we're looking to step up our game even more, and we want to make sure that Southeast Alaska knows that we're going to do everything we can. And with your support, and all the different agencies that are stand behind us, we're going to make it happen.
Yeah, it seems to be one of the really important agencies and institutions here in Juneau and in Southeast altogether. Jeremiah Beadle, I want to thank you for coming in today, Gunath Cheese, for giving us an update, all these great ways that you can participate and help out the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. Their website is sealaskafoodbank.org. I think if you're part of that State Employees Union, make sure you're hopping on the GoFundMe and add money to that. I think that's a really wonderful thing.
Yeah. And, oh, and that's if you don't even have to be a member of that union to do it.
Oh, okay.
That's just, you go to GoFundMe and you search the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. It comes up. Their union is matching up to $30,000.
So oh, I see.
We could potentially get $60,000 worth of a donation out of that matching grant. So
I love that.
If anyone is in that position to where you could put a few bucks towards it, we would certainly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming in, Jeremiah. I really appreciate the update from the Southeast Alaska Food Bank.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up next on Juno Afternoon, the Cancer Connections National Cancer Survivors Day Celebration of Life Walk. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO, and here's a little savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. Gather ye anchovies while ye may. While you're at it, get a couple of garlic cloves, a lemon, Worcestershire sauce, and olive oil. To paraphrase Robin Williams in the movie Dead Poets Society, if you listen close, you can hear them whisper to you. Go on, listen. You hear it? Carpe. Hear it? Carpe. Carpe Caesar. Seize the dressing, cooks. Paraphrasing Robin Williams again, we don't make Caesar salads because they're cute. We make Caesars because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion, crisp, juicy romaine, freshly grated Parmesan, cracked pepper, and homemade croutons to soak up that remarkable dressing. These are what we come to the dinner table for. What else can we do with homemade Caesar dressing? Free up your mind. Use your imagination. Don't just walk up the ledge like lemmings. Look around you. Use as a marinade for chicken skewers. Mix with a heaping spoonful of blackened seasoning and drizzle spicily over roasted vegetables. Or use as a luscious sauce for pan-roasted halibut. No matter what anybody tells you, words, ideas, and a lovingly made dressing can change the world. Oh, Caesar, my Caesar, our meal planning is done. This food is more than just a snack. The dinner we sought is won. Find the full recipe for Carpe Caesar dressing at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
From Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. Cancer Connection is a grassroots nonprofit organization designed to assist people living with cancer, their families, and offer support systems. And the Cancer Connection's National Cancer Survivors Day Celebration of Life Walk, excuse me, is happening at 11 a.m. Sunday, June 4th. Here to give us a preview and the rundown is Julie Hamilton, treasurer of the board for Cancer Connection AK. Hi, Julie.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you in the studio. So you're the treasurer for Cancer Connection. I think I sort of mentioned what Cancer Connection was about, but what are some of the programs that Cancer Connection offers to folks?
Well, we're really here to support folks with information and support for any cancer situation that they're dealing with. So we do things like a monthly support group, and we do some educational outreach. We have a lending library for people diagnosed with cancer, and we have a financial support where we can help them with their costs to travel for medical reasons, for cancer, you know, generally for treatment. But we also have an apartment in Seattle that is a pretty inexpensive way to stay in Seattle for treatment.
Oh, that's nice, because I'm sure it's everybody's nice. Going down to the Seattle Cancer Care and all that great big building that's mm-hmm. down there, and mm-hmm. I'm sure services many folks here in Southeast. Yeah,
right. The apartment's great because it's near all the major hospitals right there, and it's a really lovely, comfortable place to stay for, you know, less expensive than trying to stay in a hotel, for sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have our annual fundraiser run, which is Beat the Odds. A lot of people know about that.
Beat the Odds.
Great prizes out there. So National Cancer Survivors Day is one of them, and that's more, you know, support and informational and gathering. We also have our, in the fall, we have a wellness day where we do a lunch and usually an amazing speaker for, you know, talking about anything cancer related, new and improved medical services, things like that. So that you'll see. So National Cancer Survivors Day is June. We do the run the end of August, and then we have the health forum is in the fall, usually October. So those are our big three events.
That's pretty awesome. And this thing that's coming up on June 4th is it's sort of a national program, right? This happens all over the country on June 4th. And so Juno and Cancer Connection AK is participating in this sort of national get-together, really, as it were, sort of a celebration of life walk. Tell us mm-hmm. a little bit about what that is, what that means, and what will be happening that day.
Okay. I think it's actually beyond just the U.S. There's international support for this day as well.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
it's
awesome.
All over the place. And it's the... We've done it. We've celebrated in different ways. And the last few years, it's been with a walk. And National Cancer Survivors Day, I think, has been doing this specific thing since the 80s, late 80s. So I think this is year 35 of this event around the world.
And so it may not be a walk in other places. It may be something else.
They do parades. Oh. We've done an auction and dinner before. So it really, you just choose what you want to do, but almost everybody does it on the first Sunday of June. So this year it'll be June 4th.
Okay, I see. Okay. And how did you guys decide on making it a walk?
I think that might be a little bit offspring from COVID, because we wanted to do something outside. But a lot of entities and places do an outdoors thing, like a parade or a walk or, you know, a themed walk where everybody's wearing tutus or something like that.
I see.
But we have such a nice, with the Whale Park, with Mayor Bill Overstreet Park, it's such a nice opportunity to start from, you know, down by the cruise ships at Marine Park and walk all the way to the Whale. So you're celebrating life, you're remembering those who have passed, who have had cancer, and you're meeting up with others, you know, and people support, people go there too. So family and friends, and, you know, everybody has a support network. Hopefully when they're diagnosed with cancer, it's good to have them with you for this as well.
I think that's what it's all about, really, right? It's about not feeling alone. Mm-hmm. Knowing that you can connect with others, and maybe you're recently diagnosed and you have nobody else to hang out with, this might be a great way to do that. Or if you're cancer-free, maybe you've become cancer-free or you haven't been diagnosed with something like that, it's a great way to show your support and meet people who may be going through it right now. Mm-hmm. That's a nice little walk to go from Marine Park down to the Overstreet Park.
It is. It's lovely along the water.
And then I know that when you get there to the Whale, there's going to be some activities there. Are there going to be like some food or something like that?
Right. We're having a barbecue this year, and I believe it's the Coast Guard Auxiliary is doing the barbecue for us. We have hopefully bagpipes coming with us along the walk, and then we'll have a land acknowledgement when we get there. And we'll have some, there is a Tlingit dance group who will be there doing a dance and a song. And with the barbecue and the dance and the song and the music with the bagpipes, it should be really festive.
Wait, you're going to have bagpipes?
I think the bagpipes, the plan right now is for them to walk with us from Marine Park to the Whale Park.
Oh, that's playing. So interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, one day I was coming over the bridge and we saw some bagpipes down at the Whale. Maybe it's some of the folks who will be playing. This was a few weeks ago, but they were also installing some of the totem poles that day. And it was sort of this weird, wonderful conglomeration of, you know, local culture and the bagpipes playing. And it was just really special. That park has become a really special place, like a really great meeting place for things like this. So I think that's really cool. So what time does the walk start?
Well, it starts at Marine Park at 11 a.m. on Sunday the 4th. And we've said, you know, approximately 11 to 12:30. Once we get to the Whale Park, that's where all the festivities will be. And we'll have some flower seeds to give out, some cosmos flower seeds, and I think some marigold flower seeds. And we'll have informational pamphlets too as well for anybody who wants that regarding Cancer Connection and also, you know, just cancer support services that are out there.
Yeah, other resources that might be available. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I notice on the postcard it says graciously sponsored by the state of Alaska.
Yes, they give us a small grant every year to help support the funds to help, you know, support the activity.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And that's and they do that also with our wellness forum that happens in the fall.
And is this an activity? It's not necessarily a fundraiser.
No, it's
right?
not. It's not. I mean, we always have our donation jar handy just in case.
Ready to have your checkbook out just in case or a little extra cash you might have on you. But really, this is like the true meaning of getting together as a community. And it really is a celebration of life, right? It's a celebration of life walk. That's what it's called.
It is. And I'm a cancer survivor 6.5 years now. And so I always think about people in their different stages of cancer. Some are very new to it. And unfortunately, it touches so many people that it's a lovely support to have all these people walking with you. We just have to hope for good weather. And even if not, we'll bring umbrellas if anybody has those, raincoats.
We don't mind looking like tourists on a day like that, right?
No, not at all.
Isn't that the rule? You're not supposed to, if you're not having an umbrella, it means you're a tourist, right?
Yeah, so in this town, yep.
Well, it sounds like a lovely event. It's going to be the celebration of life walk from Cancer Connection. Again, it's happening on Sunday, June 4th. So not this Sunday, but the following Sunday. And I guess it happens the first Sunday of every year. There's something. Did you guys used to do something different besides a walk before?
Previously, I believe I've only been on the board for 4 years, but I believe they used to have a dinner and auction, silent auction. But that's, you know, that's pretty complicated, and we've decided to focus our fundraising on the one event, the run each year, and do the other things with other types of support to put it on and help people. This town can get pretty burned out on fundraisers sometimes.
There's a lot of fundraisers all the time, is for sure. So you can find out more about this at cancerconnectionak.org. If you want to look at the national website, that's ncsd.org. Again, I'll link that on the show notes for this page on our website. Julie Hamilton from Cancer Connection, the treasurer for Cancer Connection, is here. And thank you so much for telling us about this wonderful event. It's the National Cancer Survivors Day Celebration of Life Walk. It happens Sunday, June 4th at 11 a.m. You're going to meet at Marine Park. You're going to walk to the Whale, and then you're going to enjoy some food, and you're going to meet some wonderful people.
Right. And if the weather's nice, we might even have the marimba band playing there, which would be wonderful.
Marimba, Scottish pipes, Tlingit dance groups. Like, it sounds like a really, really great Sunday.
A celebration, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, definitely a celebration. Yeah. Julie, thank you so much for being here. Ganath Jeesh. Okay.
Thank you.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a terrific Tuesday. On tomorrow's show, the Juno Symphony and musician Taylor Vidic on their upcoming collaboration. plus a preview of the Sentinel Island Lighthouse Cruise, and also the augmented reality tour at Treadwell, and updates from the Juno Public Library. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road! Find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.